This is the Pacifica National Board reconvening at 2:16 p.m. Pacific, 5:16 p.m. Eastern Time. Summer Rees Chair, Bill Crozier Vice Chair, Afia Wangaza Secretary. And we're up on the stream now. And I believe our technical staff is calling Terry Barishas the election supervisor, national election supervisor for our upcoming Pacifica election so that we can hear from him. Do we have him online yet? Oh, sorry. Bill is going to go ahead and call roll for us while we wait to get the election supervisor on. Thank you.
Okay, Ken Aaron?
Here.
Ivan Alsame?
Here.
Teresa Ellen?
Present.
Nia Bediako?
Present.
Wesley Bethune?
Here.
Carolyn Burden?
Here.
Lydie Berzon?
Here.
Bill Crozier's here. Kathy Davis?
Here.
Revelyn Gold?
Present.
Heather Gray?
Here.
Campbell Johnson? Can't hear you, Campbell. Okay, Ali Lexa? All right.
Hello?
Wait, what up? Afia Wangaza? Not here.
Hello?
Laura Previs?
Here.
Stating the facts.
Summer Rees?
Present.
Marcel Reed? George Ryder?
Here.
Hello, Terry.
Tracy Rosenberg?
Yeah, I can barely hear you. I can hear
Siegel.
Roll call.
Hold on, Terry.
Can't hear you, Dan. Alex Steinberg?
Present.
Andrea Turner?
Presenting.
Okay, thank you. Arlene Engelhart?
Present.
LaVorne Williams?
Present.
Andy Gold?
Oh, I've released him for the afternoon.
Okay, so everybody but Campbell, Afia, and Dan, is that right? Thank you. Web Forum.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Mr. Barishas, you're on the line?
All right.
Thank you so much. This is Terry Barishas, National Election Supervisor for the Pacifica Foundation for the upcoming board elections. Thank you, Mr. Barishas. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Okay. Just a word about who I am. I administered elections for a number of nonprofits, Dartmouth Alumni Association, co-ops, and so on, as well as Pacifica elections in 2003 after the bylaws were adopted. Also, I've worked for Fair Vote, the Center for Voting Democracy, on a variety of election reform issues. Before that, I was a state legislator up here in Vermont, Progressive Party city councilor. And so I know a lot about elections. I'm currently actually an inspector of elections for my municipality. Anyway, I'm going to make this report very short because I know you probably are already behind in your agenda.
You are clairvoyant, too.
My first task when I was appointed in mid-June was to hire local election supervisors. Over 100 applications, interviewed over 25 people, and finally ended up with 5 people who are, in my opinion, just stellar. I don't know exactly how good election supervisors were in past years, but this local election supervisor batch is really good. John Bush at WPFW, Teresa Graham at WBAI, Iabosa Irador at KPFT, Sol Watson at KPFK, and Aaron Morris at KPFA, who I understand is there in the room. If he hasn't already been introduced to the group, maybe he can just stand and wave. You can talk to him later, maybe. So the whole process here, as you know, has been telescoped. Ideally, I would have had 90 days to get ready for the nomination period. That time has been cut in half. So we are really sort of under the gun to get everything in place. I have finalized, well, almost finalized candidate information packets, the nomination procedures, the petition forms, and so on and so forth. They've been circulated to the local election supervisors. We're still waiting for a few details to be ironed out before we can actually start making them public by the beginning of the nomination period, which is August 1st. The goal is, and I think we're in line to do this, Otis McClay is setting up an online candidate registration website so that we can get candidate information as much as possible online, speeding up the process of getting information about candidates out to the voters, with the idea that this information actually has to go up not just when people get their ballots, but almost immediately so people can decide if they want to seek out a candidate to ask a question to decide whether they want to sign their petition. So we want to try and get the candidate statements, responses to questionnaire questions, and so on up online as quickly as we possibly can. So ideally, anybody who wants to run, if they already know they want to run, right on August 1st, they should start. They should register online as a prospective candidate. We have scripts drafted for public service announcements for candidate recruitment. They aren't airing yet because the nomination period hasn't begun. But at each of the stations, there hopefully are recording the PSAs. We have made an agreement. Arlene, executive director, and I have made an agreement to contract with Election Services Corporation, which is on Long Island in New York, to administer the mailing and processing of ballots. The goal of saving money is that we are going to be doing a central ballot mailing and return so that all the ballots will be returned to a central location, the offices, the post office box controlled by the Election Services Corporation. We have also made the decision, I believe, to use business reply envelopes to increase voter participation. According to Election Services Corporation, that can increase voter turnout quite significantly, just not having us to find a stamp. A lot of folks don't use the snail mail that much, and they may not even have a first-class stamp in the house. So using the business reply envelope can increase participation quite a lot, he says. The big threshold decision that the foundation needs to make is whether to do a hybrid election, which means, of course, we would mail ballots out to everybody, as is the custom in all past elections, but whether we want to allow people to also either mail back their ballot or go online and vote on an internet site that Election Services Corporation maintains. This can be a controversial issue, and I want to spend just a moment talking about it. As for authority for doing it, the bylaws seem to suggest in Article 4, Section 3, that the election supervisor can decide at my own discretion whether to allow internet voting in addition to the paper ballots, as long as all members are allowed to vote by paper if they wish. Also in Article 3, Section 8B of bylaws, it talks about the foundation at its discretion being able to decide whether to use internet voting. Some people might interpret that foundation there meaning the executive director. Some people might think it means the election supervisor, since that is specified in the bylaws as the person who makes the decision. But let me be very straightforward here. I think it can be done, and I think it's fine to not do it, and I don't really have a strong opinion whether we should or should not use the hybrid internet election, and I am perfectly willing to follow the guidance of the executive director on this issue. In short, no internet election can be, on current technology, 100% absolutely positive that it is unhackable and cannot be altered. That is true of government elections, and in which case, with billions of dollars of government contracts and all those kinds of laws at stake, the risk of internet voting is quite substantial. That being said, in the case of nonprofit organizations where the financial gain of hacking an election is so much less, and the security that the election services company has put in place, the realistic threat of a hacked or fraudulent internet election, I think, is remote. I think it's very, very small. In fact, I would say it's no greater than the risk in any election with paper ballots. That being said, again, it's different for government elections than I think it is for nonprofits. The question is whether there's a lot of either money savings or voter turnout increase for using internet elections. For the 2012 elections, money basically is not an issue because, according to Election Services Corporation, the number of people who vote online is sufficient that the savings of not utilizing their business reply envelopes means that the additional cost of setting up the website for voting online is just about counterbalanced by the savings of postage of the business reply envelopes. So for 2012, the issue of finances should probably not be controlling because it's almost a wash. It might be slightly, maybe $1,000 more expensive to add the internet option. Whether it would increase voter participation much, Organic, according to the experience of Election Services Corporation, in the first year using it in a hybrid system like this, he said you might expect a 1% increase by adding the internet voting. The notion I think a lot of people are using is it might be possible if we get experience with internet voting as a hybrid this time, it would be possible to ask voters when you mail them their ballot saying, this is the last direct paper ballot you're going to receive unless you return a postcard or call a toll-free number or something to say you want to keep getting a paper ballot. And then in future elections, you could mail them a postcard instead of a thick first-class envelope with candidate statements and ballots and so on. And the postcard would simply have a PIN number that they would be assigned, which they could either call a toll-free number saying, no, I still want you to mail me a paper ballot, or go online and vote online. If you made that transition, which is not a possibility in 2012, but if you made that transition in the future, the postage and printing costs for elections, you would save many tens of thousands of dollars. However, for 2012, as I said, the option of using internet voting might increase the cost by a nominal amount. So I don't think it's really an issue of cost for this year, but it might be an issue of cost down the road. Likewise, I said it's not really an issue of, in my view, of the security of the election with or without the hybrid vote. I believe the Election Services Corporation can run a secure election either way. I want to leave time for questions and answers, so I'm just going to wrap up. So that the main question that I'm going to look for guidance from the foundation and Arlene is whether to use a hybrid election this time or not. The final question that I have, which I'm again going to ask for guidance from Arlene and from the foundation, is whether to use a ballot system where the PIN number, the 10-digit number that identifies the voter, is secret in that nobody sees that ballot other than the Election Services Company employees, or as was done in past some recent elections at Pacifica, where the image of the ballot with its PIN number affixed to the ballot was posted online so that individual voter who jotted down their PIN number can go look and see that their ballot was counted correctly. The difficulty with that is, obviously, it opens the door to vote buying, because if a person can prove how they voted, they can be compensated or threatened if it can be proved that that is their vote. The bylaws do not require a secret ballot. I think it's custom to expect it. And so whether we put up images with the PIN, as was done apparently in at least two elections, or do it as a secret ballot vote where the PIN is removed before the image is posted, is a decision that I don't really feel I need to make, but somebody needs to make it. All right, that's it for my report. I'm open to questions and answers for however much time you want to allow.
Thank you, Mr. Baricius. Yes, we do have a queue. I'm going to go ahead and just, it's going to be Alex, George, Heather, Andrea, Ken. Alex Steinberg, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Terry. Is there any possibility, instead of a hybrid election, to have an electronic election this year? Of course, providing the option to those who want paper ballots to submit paper ballots, but not necessarily mailing out paper ballots to every single member.
Yeah, it is possible to do that. I think that the bylaws allow that decision with provision that, of course, there would have to be a toll-free number for people to call when they receive their postcard saying, send me a paper ballot. There's a delay then for them getting the ballot. There would be some challenges based on the timeline. I believe the bylaws allow that decision. I believe it might be controversial, to say the least. I think there would be people who would be very upset about it. And I should say about the whole idea of internet voting, there are people whose whole activist life is centered around trying to prevent the spread of internet voting, because they fear that if it spreads to governmental elections, it opens the door for massive government election fraud. So if we use internet voting at all, I believe there will be some people who will attack that decision.
Vice Chair.
I'm next. Sorry. I'm Alex asked my question.
Sorry, George. Heather? I'm not hearing her very well either. So is she on? Her mic's not hot. I'm sorry, what do you mean, which station? Sorry, George?
Please put me back on the stack again.
Yes, of course.
All right.
Are mics okay now? Can you be heard, Heather? Go ahead.
I think it's okay now.
Okay,
right?
Go ahead. Okay. Heather Gray.
Yes, I hear.
So apparently the deadline for becoming a member is not placed on all the websites. It needs to be on the front page of the websites. So that's one issue. And then the other question is, what's being done to assist those who are disabled, both in getting the nomination petition as well as voting?
The deadline, the...
Go ahead, Mr. Mauritius.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The date...
You've got to keep my mic hot all the time, guys.
The date of record is September 1st. That should be on all the websites. I thought it was.
I'm not sure if he's even...
Arlene put that out before I think I was even hired as a national election supervisor. I thought it was on all of them all the time. But it is September 1st. It should be on all of them.
Mr. Burrages? Okay, he did hear you. Sorry, go on.
Okay.
We're having some technical difficulties. Sorry.
Should I hold?
I'm told that it's on all the websites.
She's
this is
hot.
What I'm hearing. So
we're not hearing you, Heather. You're not on the
screen. Well, I guess we all need to make sure that it's on the front page of all the websites.
Hold on. Please. Gentle people.
Test.
Everyone, please just hang on.
Testing.
Guys?
Yeah.
Everything's dead?
The mics are all dead.
Well, can you hear me?
But not across the
am I loud?
No. Terry can hear you. It's just here that we're not.
Okay, but I'm not hearing us when we speak either.
Well, if you can...
Watch your... Move your thing.
Because I've got him calling in and us talking. Yeah. And then when he comes across the speaker, it's speeding back.
Yeah, I got it.
Should I continue?
Well, it should be linked. Guys, tell us when we're good again.
But we can hear Terry.
If you can hear me, I could continue, because I heard the question.
Are you seeing Heather on the meter?
No, I'm not.
This one is not.
I'm one.
And Lydia. No, I'm the crazy one who did that.
No, I can hear.
I like having a car with me anytime
Summer?
I
go. She's alive.
Testing.
Talk to Terry.
Summer.
Hello, hola, what?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Terry, now we can hear you again. Are we back on stream, guys? Oh, we've been on this stream the whole time. Hello, public. Technical difficulties.
All right.
Just like live radio.
Shall I just continue?
Mr. Mauritius, where we had left off when we started having the technical issues and you were answering Ms. Gray's question was on the placement of the nominating period and notices on all of the Pacifica websites. We see that it is on the Pacifica.org site. I don't know if you've followed up with the local webmasters to make sure that it's appropriately linked on all the sites, but that seemed to be her inquiry.
Yeah, it was, I believe, on all five station homepages. I thought it still was. It certainly should be. All the webmasters got that from Arlene, a memo, before I was even hired as national election supervisor. She sent out a memo about putting it up, and I thought they all had.
Okay, thank you.
As for the second part of her question about people with disabilities, the only thing that we have at this point is a requirement that... petition gathering opportunities and public forums for meeting candidates, those sorts of things have to be scheduled in a location that's handicap accessible. we have no other provisions in place for doing special assistance, although I would venture to suggest that any local election supervisor...
Mr. Burrish, we've lost you, and I don't hear myself. Oh, hello?
You're not.
Yeah. My ears tell me I'm not hearing myself either.
Can you hear me now?
Maybe the noise is just electricity.
Oh, here we are. No.
Just your mind.
There we were.
Can you hear me?
Please bear with us. If you're listening on the stream and you're hearing us, we apologize for the technical difficulties. Mr. Burrish, if you can hear us, please.
I can hear you.
Oh, don't I know it. You should see me pacing in circles in the middle of Los Angeles trying to get a signal. Yeah.
I'll keep speaking now and then.
No, but we're not
you
hearing
hear
ourselves
me.
Either.
We're all the
oh
way.
My
I
God,
heard
I'm
that.
At a punker show.
5 by 5.
That's it.
That's possessed.
This is Terry. Can you hear me yet?
I don't know that you. I'm not sure that you're going to be heard though, because we're not. Our mics aren't covered right now. So let's just check the AI's website.
Yes, it does. It's there.
Where?
Nothing. Nothing.
Tap your mic.
Well, maybe you can do it.
We need some
incantation.
Oh, okay. Testing, can anybody hear me?
I have the KDFK webmaster sitting here.
Yes. And now every other one had everything.
So we don't show up.
September
1. What are we more concerned about, the word enrollment? Because we're not an HMS. Yes? Otis? Hello? I hear myself.
Sorry, I'm still here.
Hi, Mr. Burrish. Okay, folks, could we have order? I know we tend to break out in side conversation when we can't conduct business. You'll just stay there? You're charming. I love looking at you. Okay.
I need just to finish.
Yes, well, we wanted some clarification, Heather, because that wasn't. Were you asking about the term enrolled to receive ballots?
We're asking about the information about the deadline for membership to be posted on all the front pages of the websites.
Apparently it is.
I'm told that it might not be, so maybe we need to check that.
I just checked it.
Okay,
she checked
it is okay?
It was not on the KPFK website. Everything else was there, but not the September 1 date, and that's been fixed.
And that's been changed.
Minutes.
All right,
I mean,
that's great.
Seconds.
And then the other thing is that the request that the information about the deadline for the membership also be on the air, actually.
Okay, so carts.
Mentioned on the air. Yeah, through carts or whatever we're using, yeah.
Right, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you, Mr. Burrish. Just go ahead, please.
The goal, I believe, that each of the stations is hopefully going to be using the deadline as also a fundraising approach by hopefully contacting the members whose membership would expire shortly before the September 1st deadline to urge them to send in a donation with voting rights being a really small incentive in addition. I know at least one station is already organizing to do that mailing, and it will obviously be a matter of whether the stations choose to do that, but it will be certainly part of the on-air announcements, yes.
Thank you. Are you done, Heather?
Thank you, yes.
Okay, thank you. Andrea?
I'm concerned about the mailing list to the members. There's oftentimes a lot of duplications. So will that be cleaned out? Because right now I get two or three mailings every time we send out to the membership. I would like to vote that many times, you know. However, I don't want my PIN number and everything to get caught. So, I mean, will we clean and saying that I'm trying to tip an election. However, will you be able to clean out the membership list?
Right. There's several pieces of that. I could give you a long answer. I'll try to just give you the short answer for this meeting. Yes, we have an audit procedure for what we call, the technical term is deduping, eliminating duplications. Obviously, the problem is that if somebody has done volunteer work, they get member rights by doing more than 3 hours of volunteer work. They may also have given money, and maybe their name is spelled slightly differently in two different donations, and so they could be in the database three times. there are a lot of procedures that are used, including just plain eyeballing lists that are sorted by address, et cetera, to remove duplications. We have a process, an audit procedure that we've set up for doing as much deduping as we can. Hopefully staff will be doing that first. They hopefully will give us a clean list. We will then, the election supervisors, will repeat the process using their own procedures for eliminating duplications. And finally, Election Services Corporation has their own algorithms and software that they use for looking for duplications and ask us, are these two entries the same person, or is it a father-son with the same first and last name, et cetera, et cetera. So we do have procedures in mind for doing all that. The data that we're working with is notoriously, well, it's not real clean to start with, as you know. And so we're gonna do a serious job, and we're aware of the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bershus. I had Ken next on stack.
Terry, just to review, including there were two alternatives for security with the PIN number. Which one saves money and provides? Which one provides greater integrity, putting aside the consideration of confidentiality?
Neither one costs any more than the other. I guess, actually, if you leave the PIN on the ballot, you save a tiny bit of labor. The way it would normally be done, it would be on a perforated section of the ballot where the PIN number would be torn off by the people before they feed it through the scanner. So they'd first verify that there was a valid PIN number with a scanning that with a barcode reader, and then the ballots that were valid would be fed through the scanner, and there'd be an image of them. So you would save a tiny bit of labor if you simply fed the ballot through without tearing off a perforation. You'd save a tiny bit of money by not printing the ballot with a perforation section to eliminate that. So including the PIN might save you a few bucks. In terms of integrity, they are both equally secure in the sense that I believe the company will give us an accurate count regardless. The notion is that some voters might want to see that their individual ballot that they jotted down their PIN, they want to go online and see it and say, yeah, there it is, my vote got in. However, that leaves the door open for vote buying. However, it also does not really assure that there's an accurate vote count any more than not having the PIN, because a voter knows that their ballot is in the stack, that can't give them any more assurance that there aren't fraudulent ballots in the stack as well. So it cannot increase, seeing the PIN number on the image on the website does not increase anybody, it should not increase anybody's confidence that the election was counted properly. It does increase the potential, psychologically anyway, for the potential of vote buying. The reality is both risks are so remote in an election like this, I trust that the Election Services Company will not be bribed to release the secret confidential list of what voter received what PIN number, that I don't think there's any realistic concern either way. It's basically a psychological preference for what makes people feel better. Either way you do it, the election will be counted correctly.
Just a follow-up, which do you recommend?
The custom is to separate the PIN for the notion of voter secrecy. That's what I would have said before I got involved in this process. However, I know that I've been told that in the last two elections, the PIN numbers were included in the images that were posted online, and nobody complained about any attempts at vote buying or, you know, forcing people to vote a certain way. So based on the fact in the last two elections it was done that way, I'm perfectly comfortable doing it the same way it was last time. Although it's unconventional, it worked fine, and it might give some voters a feeling of confidence seeing that their ballot is right there and they can look on the website and feel good.
Thank you, Mr. Bershus. Arlene?
Terry, we haven't talked about this, but I'm assuming that the list will also be sent out to the post office for address verification?
Yes. The Election Services Corporation has a standard procedure. I mean, they always do that for bad addresses and so on, and we'll receive information back. You know, this will not just clean it up for this mailing, but they will provide back a database of bad addresses, forwarded addresses, et cetera, et cetera. So the Pacifica Foundations will be getting good information back from this process as well.
Thank you. Okay, I've got Afia, Carolyn. I'll put you on for second stack, Alex. I wanted to ask a question as well, but go ahead, Afia.
I'm hearing you say that the next cycle of elections would require people who want to receive paper ballots to have to opt into a paper ballot as opposed to people who don't want paper ballots opting out. And I'm concerned about what that means in terms of low-income and elderly people and the continuing existence of the digital divide.
No, I'm not actually saying that that would be the case. I'm saying that you actually could do that according to your bylaws. If I believed it could be fair, I would be authorized to do that this election. I'm not proposing to do that this election. But there is notion from, I think Arlene has suggested, maybe what we want to do is do the hybrid election this time so we get experience with do members vote at much higher rates if they're given the opportunity to vote online. And then if that's the case, Pacifica could decide next time if you wanted to pursue that further, keep mailing everybody a paper ballot or instead send them a postcard. I'm not proposing to do that this time, although it would be possible to do it this time. And I'm not proposing to do it next time because I'm probably not going to be the election supervisor next time. And the foundation will decide whether to pursue that at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Barishas. Colleagues, we're at time on this item. If there's no objection, we can continue for just a few more minutes so that we could have the other members' questions answered.
The feeling here is that you did not answer the question.
Can you reiterate it for him in case?
My question is whether I understand that you're not proposing it for the 2012.
Nor am I proposing it for 2013. I'm simply saying that it remains a possibility and an option for Pacifica by your bylaws at any time. And one suggestion was that it having a hybrid election this time might gather additional information to help you make that decision in the future. I'm not advocating it at all.
I'm going to rephrase it. I guess the next part of the question would be, what provisions are you envisioning should Pacifica choose to... you need to get on the queue and ask your own question.
And if we're not applying it to this election, it's probably not germane to the current conversation.
Well, no, I think that it is, because if there's being long-range planning being done, then there has to be taken into consideration the fact that there is a digital divide in this country and that it has a direct impact on people of color and older people.
Mr. Burgess, if you can answer your thoughts on that to the best of your ability, and then we'll continue.
Okay, very briefly, I agree, and that's why I'm not recommending doing it this time.
Okay.
And I believe that at some point in the future, the digital divide may go away, but I believe it still exists.
Thank you, Mr. Burgess. I'm going to go out of queue. Arlene has something to say.
I want to go on record as saying I am not recommending that for at any time in the future. I think that sending out the ballots with the option of voting online might increase our participation, and so I think it's worth that, and I think that it makes sense that it can offset the additional cost of return postage, but I'm not envisioning doing anything different than that going forward.
Thank you. So again, if there's no objection from my colleagues, I'd like us to just continue for a few more minutes so that we can, since we have the election supervisor on the call. I had Campbell, then Carolyn, then Lydia, and I'm going to put myself on stack.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Where is the vote count going to take place? I want to be clear about that.
There's two choices. My preference to save money is to do it at the offices of Election Services Corporation on Long Island. It's about an hour drive from Manhattan. The other option that was not too much more expensive is to do it somewhere in Manhattan. In either case, there would be observers would be allowed from any candidate, any station would be allowed to observe. I would certainly be there to oversee the process. But the tentative plan, because it does save a lot of money if they don't have to fly people around the country to five different cities. It saves quite a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Just want to slightly follow up. So then all of the count will be taking place on Long Island then?
That's my inclination okay. at this point, yes.
Is there anything curious about how listeners would be able to observe? I mean, any dynamics that aren't immediately, visible?
There could be. I've never been to their offices. I've never seen them. It might be that we'll want them to rent, like the Moose Hall or some public space to accommodate a larger audience than they're used to having. They run elections for a lot of nonprofits and unions and things like that, so they're certainly used to having observers at their offices for the election. But there might be more people interested in this one than they're used to. I don't know. But I don't think they would, if they don't have to travel very far from their offices, they would not charge the transportation fee. They have, in contract with their workers, they have a certain per diem that they have to pay if they have to travel. So if they can do it in their town, they don't have to pay that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carolyn?
Hi, Terry. Carolyn Burden here. In the past, we've counted staff and listener ballots differently by color-coding the envelopes for staff, so that when they come in, you can eyeball them and tell whether or not you've met quorum without actually opening and counting them. And if they are being sent to all the same location, would you consider five different color codes for five different sets of staff?
Well, that's certainly possible, but it's much more sophisticated than that. They do this all the time. Mm-hmm. The ballots presumably are going to have, the return envelopes will have a barcode so they'll know which kind of ballot is inside the envelope. They could color code them. There's a lot of ways of coding it, but they could have, if we chose, we could have 10 different P.O. boxes for the different,
Okay, good. Okay,
or we could have five P.O. boxes per station and different color envelopes. We'll work out the details with Election Services Corporation, because they do this, I mean, it's what they do day in and day out with a lot of organizations that have different classes of voters. It's not, they're not inventing this, they know how to do this.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barishas. Lydia? Oh, pass. Okay, well, then I'll ask my question. In the past, we've had significant trouble with the staff lists. We passed something, God only knows, my Groundhog Day memory here, but it's got to be a couple of years ago that there would be a staff registry. There have been specific instances where, one program claims 30 producers and requests 30 ballots, one show. Which means that one program can overcome the votes of the entire paid staff of a station. This is a problem for us because we have not yet managed to get management to institute a staff registry on a consistent basis across the country where people are simply expected to log in that, I put in this many hours per month on this show because I'm a producer. And so we know who's in the building, what work they do, how much they do, and that they're actually affiliated with something for real and that it isn't at the last moment there's essentially ballot stuffing as it's like, oh, me and my 35 producers. This has been a consistent problem for us in certainly in perception as well as reality, that there is the possibility of hijacking staff elections because of the lack of knowledge, control, and record keeping over who qualifies, whether you call them unpaid staff or volunteers. But besides people in the phone room, people who actually work in the radio station, that they really do work in the radio station and are entitled to vote in the staff election as opposed to the listener membership election. What provisions and steps are you taking to see to it that there's compliance from management in preparing a scrubbed, appropriate staff list prior to the staff election so that we have confidence in the integrity of those elections? Thank you.
I understand that is the key issue, and quite frankly, it was the biggest issue that I had to deal with in 2003. It's the issue that just about caused me to quit the election process in 2003.
we feel you.
Because I was unable to get access to the lists to even listener or member or staff lists to do an audit. The bylaws say that the volunteer unpaid staff hours must be done under the supervision of station management. It uses that phrase, station management. I'm at this point intending to require that any person who claims to be an unpaid staff person having completed 30 hours of volunteer work. This is all stations except KPFA, which has an organization, as I understand it, which the bylaws say automatically the organization defines who is and who is not unpaid staff. So the bylaws do not give me any discretion there. It's the organization that determines that. But for the other four stations, they're going to have to document it, give me a document signed by station management asserting that you have these hours and proving it. So they have to document it with a signature of station management. Now, that's all that I can go to.
Is there a deadline for that certification? And as to the unpaid staff organization, is there a deadline by which that organization is also anticipated to produce a staff list of people that they say are entitled to vote in the staff election?
Well, we're going to obviously seek that as soon as we get over the... Right now, the crunch is to get everything ready for the August 1st
sure.
beginning. So that's what all our energy is on right now. And immediately when that's over, we'll turn all our attention to the list.
Okay.
We're going to want to get an initial list immediately, and then start trying to do the cleanup. And obviously we post the first round version of the staff list at the station for anybody to look at, see if their name is there, see if somebody's name there that they don't think should be, et cetera, mm-hmm. and have an appeal process. So that process will go on. Ideally we want a list that is at least usable by August 30th because we then need to compare the petition signatures against a reasonably cleaned up list of eligible voters. At that point, we are going to continue the process. If it's not perfect by then, we have several more days, several more weeks, actually, before we actually have to send a final mailing list to the Election Services Corporation.
Thank you. Were there any other members who had questions before we... Oh, I'm sorry. Alex wanted a second question, and then we're way over schedule. So, and George? Okay. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay. Terry, since it was brought up, this question of the digital divide, I'd like to point out another aspect of this digital divide. Yes, there is a digital divide between poor people and people of different ethnic backgrounds, but there's also a digital divide between generations. People under 35 or so are used to doing things online, and they really don't like to do mailings and envelopes and stamps. So, in effect, if you don't provide an option for doing something online, you're actually discriminating against a whole class of younger people. And being that Pacifica suffers from young people's immunity deficiency, perhaps it's something we should consider.
Thank you, Alex.
All right.
You can respond, Mr. Baruchus. I mean,
I don't really. Yeah, I heard.
Okay. All right. Thank you, George.
How much money would be saved if, in fact, you sent out a postcard and people—that is, you had an electronic election—you sent out a postcard and people had to request getting the mailed packet with the candidate statements in it.
Well, there's several layers that you could do. You could send out an envelope that just has instructions and a return envelope and a ballot and information for how to go online to find the candidate statements. The bylaws allow that. That way you could keep the postage, outgoing postage, down to a single, you know, less than 1 ounce first class envelope. You'd save a lot of printing because presumably not that many people would ask for a printed version of the candidate statements. They would go online and you would have a relatively small number. I don't have the budget in front of me, but you're talking of probably $10,000-$20,000 savings. Those are numbers off the top of my head. I'd have to really dig in. The other option is the more extreme option is to not send people the paper ballot at all, but just send them a postcard with either a return postcard they could send back or a toll-free telephone number to request a paper ballot or simply go online to vote. That way you're sending just a first-class postcard to everybody, and you're not printing that much at all, in which case you're saving probably another $10,000 or $20,000.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rishis. We actually have done that before where the ballot candidate statements were not sent out with the ballots. That cost us an extra $30,000. I personally would be highly opposed to that as a game plan.
As I understand, in that particular case, the decision was to not mail them, and then the decision was override that to mail them to everybody rather than to mail them selectively. Yeah.
Right. Obviously, I don't think we want to repeat that experience that way. And it's apparently been voted on the Elections Committee. Carolyn, I'm going to take you as the last person. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'll let you be the last question, and then we'll thank Mr. Barishas for his time.
Thank you. Terry, one last question. We actually do have email addresses for a great many members. Is there any possibility of contacting members by email and asking them the same questions about how they would like to vote?
I don't think that's practical. Unless you have emails for virtually everybody, you're creating two classes of voters then.
Yes.
All the voters need to be treated the same, whichever the procedure is.
Thank you very much, yes, especially to avoid litigation. Okay, thank you, Mr. Barishas. Are there any final thoughts you wish to share with us?
I'm actually kind of excited about
hold
this.
Hold on. We appreciate your excitement. It's nice. We need some passion in this organization. Ken had one more question. I apologize. Okay. Go ahead. What?
Not a question. I just really want to acknowledge your knowledge and dedication to getting us an honest, fair election.
Oh, well, I'll second that. Thank you, Mr. Barishas, for being willing to take this on again. You know, this is a dynamic organization. We appreciate your taking on this task for us, and I'm glad you're excited about it. So maybe it'll go better this time. Thank you very much.
I love that word. It's a dynamic organization.
Yes, it is. I always try to find a positive way of expressing our energetic level.
I think I'll use that from now on. All right.
Thank you. Okay, have a great day. Thank you for joining us. All right, folks. You know, we're... Thank you. I like the word dynamic. It does describe it. Thank you, members of the public. We're behind schedule, as you know, but the elections are of paramount importance. I would like to give just a few moments to the local election supervisor, particularly because we have many members here from KPFA, and he's had the courtesy of being with us the entire afternoon and morning. And Aaron, I don't know your last name.
Morris.
Aaron Morris, if you could come up and take that microphone. Heather, could you help him get that microphone into position? And you could just introduce yourself, say hi to the people and everything, since you've been kind enough to join us. So this is Aaron Morris, local election supervisor for KPFA.
Okay, hi everyone. Can you hear me?
No, we cannot. Please make his mic hot. Thank you. Now you're good.
Okay, you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Aaron Morris. Like you said, I've been hired to do the local election here at KPFA. I am also not afraid and very excited about this process.
Yay! Thank you for being fearless.
No problem. I'm available. My information right now, the KPFA website has been updated with my email address, so I can be located there through email. Is really a good way to get a hold of me right now. So, and I don't know if anybody has any questions or that I could answer.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and take it. Carolyn, did you want?
I just wanted to ask if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, perhaps, and your background.
Yeah, absolutely.
And why you're taking this job.
First and foremost, I'm taking this job because I believe I'm competent to handle the job.
Thank you. We like competence.
I like competence too. Yeah. I have a bit of a background with elections. I work with the Registrar of Voters in Santa Clara. My first experience was with the gubernatorial recall election, which I worked the election. I didn't have anything to do with the results. But I was just there, and I got a lot of education in that particular process in fair voting practices and what people expect, and also the various types of things that do creep in when we're talking with elections, and they do creep in. I'm a graduate of UC Santa Barbara. I have a double major, which don't really apply to this particular job, but that's not very unique. It just happens. I have a major in black studies and biology. Biology. I did a year of AmeriCorps with the... I'm very glad you guys know what that is, because most times when I say I did a year at AmeriCorps, people say they have no idea what that is, and I end up telling them it's Peace Corps, just here. But I did a year at AmeriCorps with an organization called the San Francisco Education Fund. I have quite a bit of nonprofit experience now, so I'm working with various nonprofits. My background is mostly in community organizing. I'm just... I'm a very likable person right now. I like
yeah. You're hitting all the high points.
Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah, so again, I believe I have the qualifications necessary to take care of this job as well as possible. I've read a lot of the old reports, and I know a lot of the things that have come up, and I'm prepared for those. I'm prepared for those.
We're still here.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm still here. Okay.
I have Arlene, Alex. Go ahead, Arlene.
Yes, I'm on the KPFA website, and at least I'm not easily finding your email there. So maybe you could give your email, and then you could talk to the webmaster next week about making sure it's easily accessible on the website.
Absolutely. So on the website, it's actually in the staff. If you go to staff, it says the local election supervisor. My email address is election@kpfa.org.
Okay.
Pretty, yeah.
Very good. Election, correct?
Yeah, election.
At KPFA.
At kpfa.org. Yeah.
That's very easy to remember. Okay, thank you. I have Alex and then Campbell.
I just want to congratulate you on your appointment. I am sure you will do an excellent job. And you should also be aware that things are so factionalized in this town that the last time we had to appoint an election supervisor for anything, we had to make sure that person did not know a single soul in Berkeley.
You're talking about the guy I hired.
Well, I guarantee I will not. I'm professional, so I will not allow any type of factionalism to influence me in whatsoever.
Thank you.
I'm a Bay Area native. I live in Oakland. West Oakland.
See, so you don't know anybody in Berkeley.
So I don't come to Berkeley much often.
Actually, you're my cousin.
Yeah, I know her very well. I don't.
Thanks.
I'm out there.
Yes, be careful not to rub shoulders at cocktail parties. Okay, Campbell.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The work that you did with the your prior election experience, was that as an individual or was that with a firm?
I actually worked for the county of Santa Clara at the Registrar of Voters.
Okay.
Right.
And can you just briefly describe the range of in your work with the county?
Absolutely. My range of the work with the county, initially, it was the first year that they actually were rolling out the touchscreen voting machines. And, yeah, so I also had nothing to do with that. But my job ranged from maintenance and diagnostic testing of the electronic voting machines and making sure that they were fair, which, I mean, you know how that turned out. And also verifying voter data, you know, whether people are registered to vote or not, and when it came to petitions and, you know, verifying signatures and whatnot. So I did
Thank
that
you.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Teresa Allen?
Aaron, in the process of trying to think of ways to reduce money, because I'm on the elections committee, you may be aware that we have financial issues and everyone has been asked to cut funds and cut expenses. And I don't think that our national election supervisor was specifically asked to, you know, cut a certain amount of money. And one of the reasons why hours were not cut from the local election supervisors was, in my opinion, from what I heard, because they were going to be doing outreach, and outreach is so important. So tell me what part you expect to play in actually doing outreach for KPFA while you're...
Outreach for KPFA in terms of the, like, elections process itself, correct?
I'm thinking they're also thinking in terms of people becoming listeners, supporters, members.
Got it. Okay. Well, in terms of people becoming listeners, supporters, members, I know we have here at KPFA a couple of fundraisers coming up. Their fund drives are coming up. And I did plan on collaborating in any way, shape, or form that I could to, on a dual basis, fundraise, you know, assist in the fundraising process, also promoting the election at the same time. So in promoting the election, not just promoting voter participation, but also soliciting candidates and whatnot. So maybe working hand-in-hand with the fund drive itself.
Excellent. Thank you. Like carts and things of that nature.
Absolutely.
Participation to help.
I don't know if I have a cart voice.
You have a fantastic voice. You'll be just fine. So you'll encourage people to become members so that they may participate in the elections,
absolutely,
both as candidates.
Absolutely. It is.
Yeah, good, good, good. Excellent. Yeah, because stimulating interest significantly in advance of the election so that you actually have participants both as voters and,
as candidates
is very helpful. Thank you. Helps us reach quorum, too. You're up, LaVarne.
I'd like to welcome you to Pacifica Foundation. And just a question, you seem to be in that demographic range that we really need. What do you suggest we do to get people more like you into Pacifica?
So I think that from what I've noticed and from my own personal knowledge, I think that it's going to deal a lot with targeting audiences as you know, equitably as possible. And I think that as far as getting an accurate representation of the area, it's going to take a lot of outreach and a lot of me actually even, you know, hitting the ground and just door to door if that is necessary, promoting what needs to be promoted.
You're hired, man. We'll take some more of that.
You got it.
All right, folks, are there any other questions for our local election supervisor? Go ahead, Carolyn.
Yeah, just one last one. Listening to you, I'm wondering, the general managers meet with the executive director weekly on a teleconference, and I'm wondering, are there plans for all the local supervisors to meet with Terry Barishas regularly to discuss these things, or haven't you?
Well, we do. We have set up regular conference calls.
Great. That's what I mean.
Yeah, we had our first yesterday. So
okay, make sure you get to speak first.
Got it.
Fantastic. We're all of the local elections.
Actually, he has ordered us in a fashion where KPFA, my representation, is first. So
all five of the local election supervisors and the national supervisor are conferring on a regular basis.
We have a regular conference call, and we also have rolling requests for conference calls as well.
That is fantastic. Thank you. We like to see coordination. More of that in the network, too. Very good. Thank you so much, Aaron, and thank you for being with us today. Thank you for taking on the job. All right, folks, members of the public, we are over scheduled. You all know that, but I think this was productive and helpful to hear from our election supervisors. Yes, Ms. Revelin, did you have just something to say? Okay. All right. Okay. No, I think she's coalescing a thought. Did you have something? You can share it, but use the microphone, please. Microphone.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a time-sensitive proposal for Arlene, which I have talked to her about, but I would just like to present it to the board. It is very time sensitive, and I'd like to know when I can do it. Can I do it now?
We've got people waiting who have reports to do. Is it time sensitive has to be done today, or time sensitive could get done tomorrow?
It's about the massacre at the theater.
Gesundheit.
And it basically, it just...
Go for it.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, just sitting here and trying to have divided attention.
Folks, please, everybody, bear with each other. Thank you. Go ahead, Reverend.
Just sitting here and having divided attention, I typed up two paragraphs, and I'd like to send it to everyone, but also, if they have input or whatever, send it to Arlene. And basically, it says, regarding the mass shooting in Aurora, Colorado, that took the lives of no fewer than 12 audience members and wounded 58 others, may we advise the executive director of the Pacific Foundation to make a public statement in print and or other media that the Pacifica Foundation stand against violence and the unregulated obtaining of weapons via the internet, commercial, and other outlets, and encouraged to be uncontrolled by the NRA, serves to continue the upsurge of violence and sabotage efforts towards community, national, and world peace. Further, gratuitous violence in television, film, advertisement, electronic gaming, etc., directly contributes to the destabilization of productive communities and alternatives to opposing ideas. These individualistic acts are mirrored in a society that continually uses war to resolve issues of governance, resources, and land occupation. We at Pacifica will always stand for a humane and peaceful solution to conflicts, and as such, extend our sympathies to the victims, their families, the surrounding communities, and all people who absorbed the shock of this tragic event.
Thank you, Evelyn. I don't find that motion to be... You're the second? Okay. I don't find that motion to be uncontroversial, personally, and I would not support it. I don't think it's appropriate to derail the entire schedule for the rest of the day, because that requires real discussion. I would not support that motion. I'm happy if we want to take it up tomorrow and discuss it, or we have some discussions tonight, okay, but I think that we should continue with the agenda, because that will take us in another direction, because it has a lot of political content in it with which many members may disagree. Okay, thank you, Revelyn. But I'm perfectly open to discussions after dinner. Ken?
We have a...
I know that. Okay. I was putting us back on schedule. Don't worry. I'm on it. Okay, so, folks, we have time certain at 4 o'clock for public comment. Depending on the temperament of the public, perhaps we will ask to move that down a little bit. What we have next on the agenda is the Executive Director's Report, the KPFA Manager's General Manager's Report, and the KPFA LSB Chair's Report. Those are the three things that come next that were scheduled to occur before public comment. I'm going to go to the Executive Director's Report, and then we'll feel the temperature of the room if we want to have public comment before those other two reports, because I doubt we'll have time to do them and then get to public comment on time, or if the public is willing to have that move down a little. So, folks, if we could have as much attention as possible, I'd like to give the floor to the executive director. No?
Do you want to take those other two reports because
they've been waiting
here as guests?
Sure.
And then you can reschedule. That would be fine. Mine. That's okay.
Okay, that sounds good, because I've already rescheduled myself for tomorrow. Yeah. I didn't even mention that. I've already moved to tomorrow. It's the general manager's report of the KPFA and the KPFA LSB chair's report. They were scheduled for now, and they were supposed to occur prior to the public comment. So thank you, Arlene. We'll either move them. We'll probably move them to tomorrow, your report and my report, because that's probably how it'll end up shaking out, or maybe after public comment. We'll see how it goes. Okay, I would like to... There's buzz. There's a lot of buzz in the room. Thank you, everyone. If I could ask Andrew Phillips if he could come forward, please. Huh? I said Andrew. Andrew Phillips. Yes, if you could go ahead and take one of the microphones, Mr. Phillips, and we'd like to welcome Andrew Phillips, the interim general manager of KPFA, and his report. Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Okay, folks, just one moment, Mr. Phillips. If everyone in there, many more members of the audience have come in, of the public, and thank you all for being here. If you could all fit into the room, and then... Standing room only, huh? We're sold out. It's pretty crowded over there. Is everyone in the room, or do we have people outside? Huh? Some people, it's going to get real tight over there. I opened a bunch of them. If there are more, I think every window, if there... Okay, if someone would like to go ahead and open the remaining windows, because we do not have air conditioning, it is stiflingly hot in here. Thank you. Thank you. At least there's no construction like yesterday. All right, thank you, everyone. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I felt so stupid. I left it upstairs. Okay, thanks. All right, is everyone in the room yet, or do we still have people stuck out in the hall? Everyone's in? Thank you.